Attention shoppers, attention shoppers. Welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, your weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I am your host, Jason Cawley, and I am joined by my co-host and proprietor of Sun Cinema, Ryan Hunter Mitchell.
Below. Hey, Jason.
There you are.
How you doing?
Need sorry, a price check. Price check on mic three, please.
Yeah, sorry. I was over in produce.
Excellent.
We don't have David today.
We don't.
Maybe we'll call him in later. He's busy. He said he didn't want to be here.
Oh.
Whatever it was. But.
Makes sense.
We have Mariel Garcia.
Hello, hello.
Who's. Friend of the podcast. Occasional guest host. And also occasional presenter, curator at Sun Cinema.
Yeah, happy to be here, guys.
Yeah, excellent. Glad you're here.
How's everyone's weekends?
It's fantastically wet.
Yeah, it was pretty shitty. Oh, there we go. We had a pretty fun weekend at Suns. We watched Selena on Friday.
All right.
You guys Selena
Woo-hoo!
Fans?
J-Lo.
Yeah. J-Lo is great. You know, I watched the beginning of that recently, like a couple weeks ago. Had you
seen it before?
Yeah, and I liked the movie a lot. And this time, for whatever reason before, I didn't find it cheesy. But I was really finding it cheesy this time.
Yeah, I can see that. The story at its core is really fucked up. But... yeah, I can see how it comes off a little cheese. It's not the best acted movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool, but I didn't notice, like, they really make it a heavy-handed thing of, like, look how American they are. They like American things. They like Motown music. They like Donna Summer. The opening concert when she comes in, she just does covers of, like, disco songs, maybe, like, ABBA or something.
Yeah.
But they really try to be like, see, look. I mean...
they're just like us, brown people.
Yeah, I understand... what I'm guessing was their motivation, which was like, hey, we want to make this accessible for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of racist white people, and maybe they should, you know, have more community with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But that also, like, waters down some great Selena songs. And
Do you guys have, like, a film that really sort of, like, represents Hispanic culture to you in your minds? Maybe a certain country, maybe... a certain period of time.
That's a good question.
An American film?
No, you mean an American film?
An American film.
Oh, gosh.
Because, you know, I just...
Born in East L.A.
You know, and I just may be naive and not as exposed to as much cinema, but when I think of Hispanic film in America, I think of the worst stereotypes.
Well, like, that's what I was... everything that comes to mind is like some American actor
bullshit.
Playing, you know, like... that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you mean like the immigrant experience or movies about like Mexico?
You know,
or?
I would say run the gamut that either represent Hispanic culture in some way, much like the fantastic, and I say this in the most sarcastic way, Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Hmm.
Yeah,
by Woody Allen.
Never saw that.
Yeah.
No, you're
never not missing anything.
Yeah. Like this time he's got two beautiful women.
Three, actually.
Does Almodovar count? Like Volver comes to mind.
Yeah.
But these are Spain, right?
That's, I mean,
No, Spanish, Latin, you know.
Okay.
Latin speaking.
Yeah, Volver would be
my... Yeah, true.
I mean, yeah. When I was younger, it was probably like literally Born in East LA or like movies about LA.
Yeah.
Like Mexican culture.
Cool.
Or Desperado. El Mariachi, which we showed earlier. Like, those were cool movies. But I think I just liked Van Damme movies and action movies at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, I get that it's definitely very cheese, but, you know, it's one of the few films that I watch and I think tells an important story to Latin Americans and especially Hispanic Americans here in the U.S., that doesn't devolve into, I mean, some violence, but not, you know, selling drugs, not killing people, not, you know, all these like tropes and stereotypes that are traditionally associated with, and in particular, female Latin Americans, which is overly sexualized, like can't stop fucking people, I guess. I don't know. You know, all those things.
And you think Selena is good because it doesn't do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. But also, what about, and I'm just posing this, I don't know a movie that's a good example. What about also just like normalizing that those are human things and like not just totally Disney channeling things and acting like it doesn't happen and that somehow that it's bad when like hard times happen or sexual energy, like that's like the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, you can do that with other, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Do that
with other ethnicities, I don't
know. Right?
Desperado probably doesn't do this well or anything. I just mean.
Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, it's tough when that's all you see of like a certain segment of the population. But yeah, Selena's great. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, the music's good. what did we do on Saturday? Oh, you know what? We did that event for Nicaragua on Saturday.
Yeah, you went to that.
How'd
right?
that go?
It went really well. Elena Lacayo, who is always at Suns, she's in the neighborhood musician. She played a short concert and explained a lot of context for what is happening in Nicaragua, without being like too political. Mm-hmm. It mostly was a fundraiser for refugees entering into Costa Rica. It was a fun time, fun music, some, you know, bummer, insightful videos about what's going on. But sure. Overall, it was a fun time, and I think it was a good fundraiser. I did not see the movie last night, or Sunday, so I can't talk about those.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about Saturday? Like, what's going on in Nicaragua, and how much did you guys raise?
You know, I don't want to get too involved with it, because it is a little tricky and it's hard to speak to, which was kind of something that was a good challenge about doing the event on Saturday, was that David and I don't know a lot about Nicaragua.
Yeah.
There's a history in Latin America of, you know, U.S. colonialism. So any intervention, especially anything kind of political intervention-wise, is just further colonialism.
Yeah.
So, you know, we tried to really stay neutral on that, which I think is important. Mm. You know, former Sandinista hero Ortega is present again for his third term, which is, I think, unconstitutional in Nicaragua. And now they're making austerity cuts, which are causing protests, and they're silencing the protesters. So there's a lot of, like, press oppression and student oppression, murders, disappearances. And from that violence is creating refugees entering Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. I think that's all pretty not...
controversial.
Yeah, I think that's all out in the open. From there, you know, who's trying to intervene and how gets really murky anywhere from there. So so that's all I can say on it. But the music was great.
Yeah.
And Elena just had a great... You know, she could guide us through some of the old folk songs of former Ortega fans and music about the revolution, but now those artists are critical of the politics in the country now. So she was able to guide us through that. I wish she were here to tell us about it, but she did enough. She did like a great show and really helped us put that whole thing together.
That sounds awesome.
Anything else? Anyone see something not at Suns recently?
I saw Love Gilda, the Gilda Radner documentary by Lisa Diapolito.
How was it?
It was good. It felt like it had a gaping hole where Bill Murray should have been.
Mm.
So, you know, they go through, it's just, they found these discovered audio tapes that Gilda Radner did when she had cancer.
Oh.
And, you know, through her battle with cancer and years-long battles with cancer. And interviewed everybody. I mean, they had Lorne Michaels, Chevy Chase, you know, on down all the SNL crew, Gene Wilder, some old interviews with Gene Wilder, obviously. And they did a great job of kind of representing her life as a whole. An unbelievable amount of video footage from her as a child, like Super 8 stuff, to her, you know, during the SNL days, which was pretty wild stuff. And was pretty,
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was pretty great, like house scenes of all of them just hanging out, and you know, you get a lot really good kind of behind the scenes of what life was like in the late 70s and in New York and in SNL and through her perspective. And you realize like how little film career she had, which I always felt like she had.
What films is she in, even?
Not really anything. She did Hanky Panky with Gene Wilder, which is where they met, which is not... It's a very forgettable early 80s film.
Just from those two alone, should be great.
Haunted Honeymoon, which was a total flop.
I love Haunted Honeymoon. Dom DeLuise, yeah, right? That's the radio flop. Show one. Oh, that movie's great. Definitely a flop.
But that's kind of it. But there was, like, that was the only thing. And the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, she had a relationship with Bill Murray, and he's not part of this, you know, which Bill Murray makes his own decisions and can do whatever Bill Murray wants to do. But it felt like it had everything covered, and there was just one kind of gaping hole where Bill Murray should have been.
So they don't really touch on that at all?
They touch on it a little bit, but everybody else they touch on, you kind of get to see their perspective. They come on and talk about it, you know, and then they talk about the Bill Murray thing in kind of a box and then try to move on without anything from Bill Murray because they didn't have it. And that was the only thing that you look back and you're like, oh, it really was kind of essential, you know, would have been essential to have Bill Murray in there, and he wasn't there. But otherwise, I mean, it's a completely enjoyable documentary. I kind of steeled myself because, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking. You know, at the end, we all know what's going to happen to Gilda here.
So you're just prepping it for it?
Yeah, and it doesn't really, like, hit you over the head too hard with her death. And they handled most of it, you know, in a, I hate to say it, entertaining way, but they do, you know, try to add humor all the way up to the end, and which was representative, I guess, of kind of who she was and how she was dealing with cancer and time passing and her eventual passing away.
Did they talk at all about, like, her relationship with Gene Wilder?
Oh yeah, they discussed that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And they had some great old video, you know, footage from the two of them together, and some old interviews with them together, and people that knew them, you know, at that time. So that all meshed really well. It was just, you couldn't get around, like, where's Bill Murray? I mean,
he's probably hanging out at some 22-year-old's house party, like in Brooklyn, or making Rushmore 2.
Wes Anderson movie.
Being a caricature of himself.
Wait, Jack, you just watched which one?
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring up another movie, but last night I watched Isle of Dogs. I also watched the Quincy Jones documentary, which was not that bad.
All right.
Okay. But yeah, I watched Isle of Dogs last night, which I didn't, which I liked more than I thought I would.
Hadn't caught up with it yet, yeah.
So we were just, you mentioned that and we all just went on a Wes Anderson kick, and then Meryl just kicked it over and this is fun. Do it again.
Okay. Kicking so, Wes Anderson
so,
in his
so
teeth.
Talk about the oppressive regime of Wes Anderson.
Dictator Anderson.
Well,
yes.
So in particular, I think it was thrown kind of into such stark contrast for me because on Sunday night we showed, Jericho, Infinite Flight of Days, which is a documentary about a small town in Colombia and the women, the older women that lived there. We're talking like 60 plus. And kind of just about their life experiences. I mean, everything from, you know, growing up, families, sons, daughters. It's really just like sitting down on a couch and listening to, you know, your grandma's talk about, you know, their lives. And it really runs the gamut, and it shows, you know, just a beautiful side of Colombia, and both visually and like emotionally, a very like complex and multifaceted picture of a town. But during all these scenes that you're listening to, the cinematography in it is amazing. And Catalina Mess, I believe David actually reached out to her to see if she'd come on the show and chat with us.
I think she can next week.
Yeah, so next week you should definitely, you know, talk to her about this. But she, you know, she just shows these amazing views of the households where people are living, the things that they love, the people that they love, you know, pictures and things like that. And just such a, you know, it's very Wes Anderson. It's structured, but it's naturally found. So it doesn't feel like it's curated or
constructed
in any way. Uh-huh. And so it just really is beautiful and complements so well the things that you're hearing throughout. And when, you know, Jack said this about Isle of Dogs, it just kind of rolled my eyes because, you know, more and more lately, I feel like Wes Anderson movies just feel like this oppressive sort of sterile, you know, geometry where you have to see a scene in a certain way and you have to experience it in a certain way. And everything is placed in this certain spot because visually it makes sense. And that's the only way that it can exist in this film. And it just feels so oppressive and, like, so constraining.
Like his neuroses.
Yes. I feel anxiety when I watch his movies sometimes. I'm just like, ugh. Like,
I think it's, like, also how often... I hadn't watched a Wes Anderson film in years. It's been years since I've seen one. I think maybe that's why I enjoyed it. I was saying I didn't love the Darjeeling Limited. And now, in retrospect, I'm like, I was watching a lot of Wes Anderson films at that time. Mm. You know what I mean? I think you kind of get oversaturated with it.
Yeah.
So. Oh, it's definitely a note. You know, I always wonder if he's boxing himself in too much to these tropes that have now become his signature.
Right.
So if that is kind of like stifling his ability to move outside of that.
Do you feel like that about Gondry too?
Yeah. Well, the tropes aren't... I don't know that they're so specific or noticeable in Gondry. But also, I don't know what he's done lately. So,
well, there's that TV thing he did.
The new
with
thing
Jim,
he did with Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Oh.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I haven't watched it yet. I'm sure it's fine, but that makes sense.
Like she fell to Mariela's face.
That does seem like a Michelle Gondry thing. Yeah, I mean, it's not just that Wes Anderson's cutesy. It is very meticulous, but if you look at something like Bottle Rocket, his first work, there is a lot of symmetry. There's a lot of subtler versions of things that he does later, and it is more in found spaces because they are...
I think it really comes into play in the Royal Tenenbaums where it's this house becomes part of the character. You know, it's the first one before even Rushmore and Bottle Rocket preceding it. By the time you get to the Royal Tenenbaums, it's very much, this is a place. Yeah. And then that place becomes a very big character in the movie.
Mm-hmm. And each room reflects each character.
Exactly.
Well,
and I can see how that could be maybe a little stifling or claustrophobic even. But in all honesty, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I'll take Wes Anderson doing something original, and maybe while it might be constraining, I'll take that over 90% of
wandering
what
nonsense.
I see, at the movie theaters the rest of the year.
Yeah. Touché. I mean, and it's like asking, like, hey, Godard, don't make a movie in French.
Right.
Like, it is what he does. He uses symmetry and, like, set design and color palettes. It's very easy to make fun of, and it deserves, compared to something that naturally happens, that has obviously what he's kind of going for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it seems cheesy, you know, or a lot of other things, or constricting.
But is Isle of Dogs, like, his trying to get out of his trope, like Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Oh, I think those are him accentuating his tropes, like ultimate control.
Right.
I can't even deal with humans anymore. They're too natural.
I want every scene to...
Wow, true enough.
You have to jump 2 inches, not...
Physics?
Damn you, universe.
Yeah.
It was kind of... Isle of Dogs is a little bit like a Wes Anderson Greatest Hits movie in that way.
Right.
But are they all becoming the Greatest Hits movies? But I kind of thought that about Grand Budapest, and then as I watched it again, I realized, like, after I stopped being distracted by the spectacle and the colors and the other pretty stuff, it is funny how he has these really odd scenarios that are so contrived, and he makes you realize it's so contrived, but then somehow he touches on a certain vulnerability at time to times. Or have you ever seen Dogville with Nicole Kidman? It's on a soundstage.
Lars von Trier.
Yeah, it's so obviously not a movie. Or not really happening. And then to still get you to somehow be tangled up into a character, even though it's constantly reminding you that this isn't real, you know it's not real, and then you're still getting frustrated with the characters or still getting sad with the characters or confused. That is a fun bait and switch. Not that it's not really fun to rip on Wes Anderson, but I do think that's also as contrived as it is and artificial or... The best is how anxious it makes you feel. Like, that's true. But despite it being so fantastic, the fact that you, like, still bite every once in a while, you're like, that got me. Okay, that got me. That was cute. But yeah, but also fuck West Hampton.
There it is.
Can we listen to some more shopping music, and then we're going to talk about Mariel's programming?
We can do that, yeah. Right. Here we go. This is the... Oh, wait. Hold on. This is the...
Sun Cinema Podcast.
Oh.
Live at the grocery store. The store is pumping. Good tunes from Full Service Radio.
Well, we got a blue light special on aisle three.
All Wes Anderson movies, 50% off.
75.
Let's talk about Papas y Huevos. Mariel's, the movies you picked. And, well, I'm going to read the bio that we put on our website. Papas y Huevos is a community organizer and board director currently residing in Washington, D.C. Her interests include art, fighting the patriarchy, and pepperoni pizza with ranch and hot sauce, and potatoes and eggs.
They're staples. That's why I like them, let's be honest.
Yeah, you're presenting a lot of the movies this month. Do you want to tell us about how and why and what?
Yeah, sure. So kind of the focus that I wanted to go into with the movies that I picked this month were... Caribbean themed in particular, Caribbean Latin American themed. So I think you guys already went over this one, but La Vida Util. I don't know if you had
talked about that one
before.
I don't think we have, actually.
Okay. So you know,
we may have glossed.
Yeah, sure. A couple times, David.
Well, you should definitely check it out because A Useful Life in English. It's about a cinematographer in Uruguay. Oh, sorry, not a cinematographer, a small cinema owner in Uruguay.
Right.
And, you know, him struggling to make it a business that runs and everything. And
yeah, David was actually really, like, pushing us, like, you guys need to see this.
You guys got to watch it. I mean, it's David's life, right?
Oh,
like,
man.
The guy's struggling, not struggling to keep a business going, but, you know, just going through the monotonous, like, everyday realities of making a business out of something you love, which is a very difficult thing. If you've ever worked in a restaurant, like, sure, as a chef, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do. And then, you know, they have a podcast.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. It was hitting close to home.
Yeah. There's so many reasons that we can't watch this.
And he gets his hair cut by a friend.
Wow, really?
I'm not joking. what else was there? There's a guy who works at the cinema who, like, drones on and on and on forever.
Yeah, the Larry type. Yeah. Oh, Larry's a subject of the...
Okay,
show.
I wasn't sure. Oh, yeah.
The listeners know Larry.
The real listeners know.
Yeah.
So they have him, like, on the podcast, and he just rambles on and on for ages.
I don't think we could ever have our Larry on the podcast, right?
No.
Like, he's going to say something wrong.
No, yeah, I don't think so.
He's not going to stop talking, and he's going to be...
We'd get in trouble.
Yeah.
Wow, really, huh?
I think so.
And just the mixing him. He gets so quiet and so whispery, you'd have a hell of a time on sound.
Yeah.
Sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah, let's bring him on.
But I picked that one in particular, though, even though it's based in Uruguay, the director for it is a woman, a Puerto Rican woman. And so I was trying to find more voices from Puerto Rico and from the Caribbean that, you know, oftentimes get kind of drowned out in the larger sort of like film spheres in Latin America, Mexico, you know, Argentina, kind of the classics. And so I picked La Vida Util and then also Moloch Tropical, which is directed by Raul Peck of I Am Not Your Negro and Young Karl Marx fame. And I had actually already seen this movie before I presented it and just absolutely loved it. And it's kind of a story about, well, it's a fictional story based loosely around the Duvalier regime. You know, the movie never actually has any sort of, it doesn't say where it is. It's some fictional, right. But it
they
looks
say
like
Haiti. On the phone, she says Haiti.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, it's yeah. Rachel. I'm in Haiti, darling.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, it's obviously implied.
Yeah, yeah, we all know. But it's really, really great because it talks about this, you know, this revolutionary who comes to power and his power, you know, corrupts him so that he doesn't see like failures of his administration and the choices that he's made, and the corruption of power is just, it's so dark.
Right.
And very funny, and in particular, one of the things that I really enjoy about this film, and I think Raoul Peck does very well, is that he has very round, you know, female characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're monsters, you know, just like the best of them.
You know? So they have majesty.
So, you know, oftentimes like women portrayed in these films are flat and like two-dimensional, and either they're, you know, pious virgins or, you know, sluts. And these women are truly very just like well-rounded.
Three-dimensional characters.
Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, characters. And so I really enjoyed that. And this movie in particular, you know, speaks to Raoul Peck's own sort of history growing up, where his family was exiled from Haiti because of his father's participation in, you know, some political activities. His father was a doctor, and so they went actually into a USAID program that sponsored doctors to go overseas and serve in, I think it was CAR, the Central African Republic, where he grew up for many years. And he also experienced a lot of oppression while he was there, checkpoints, things like that. And so, you know, seeing this movie, you kind of see all that played out. In particular, there's a scene where his mother comes up to a checkpoint, and the checkpoint guards, his mother being the mother of the president.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she comes up to a checkpoint and says, I'm the mother of the president. And the guards at the checkpoint say, what? Like, what are you talking about, you crazy woman? Like, you don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, yeah, I am. Like, call him, you know? And, but Raoul Peck talks about, in this interview that he was doing with NPR, he talks about how, you know, checkpoints are such a stark and, like, drastic measure of a society where, depending on the questions that you're asked and the question and the answers that you give, your fate can be decided like right then and there.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that was it was very neat sort of parallel to see reflected in his movies, and just very well made, very dark humor, you know, if you're in for a sad laugh.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so there's that one. And then what else? Oh, tonight we're showing Vacas con Gafas, and that is a movie made by a Puerto Rican director. Again, was trying to find like more voices in the Caribbean to talk about. I have a friend that I know, and we talk about movies a lot, in particular Puerto Rican films. He's Puerto Rican, you know, Gonzo, okay. Right?
Uh-huh.
He's not a fan of
he's
this
not
movie.
A fan of this
no,
movie.
No,
oh.
No, not at all. and so, you know, I'm interested. I actually haven't seen it yet.
It's from 2015?
2014. Yeah, 2014, okay. I think, yeah.
Cows Wearing Glasses.
Cows Wearing Glasses,
I
yes.
Mean, I like that title.
Right?
A lot.
Yeah. So it's about a painter who, or visual artist who starts to go blind, and he can lose his sight, his vision at any moment. And so kind of changes his perspective, his approach, life, things like that.
Sure.
And it just seems very up my alley in terms of like sort of a dark twisted humor, but he is not a fan of it.
Oh.
Yeah. So well. I'm interested to see exactly why that is, but
we'll make him do a report on it. if it's good, we're going to make him defend his stance. We're going to have you guys on live debate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to have him call in and whatnot.
We also, what's going on Saturday? It's next Saturday.
So this Saturday is Salsa, the motion picture.
So dancing?
It is right. It is dancing. It is salsa. It is Jerry Curl mullets. Mm. It is everything about the 80s and salsa and, you know, everything Hispanic that Dirty Dancing wasn't.
Sure. Does it take place in New York City or does that does
you know,
it have
not
a setting?
Sure.
We'll
I'm not
find
sure
out.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll find out. I haven't seen it yet, but it looks fantastically bad. And, you know, the main
character.
Is this
the 1988 salsa film?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's basically like Dirty Dancing, but, you know, upping the cheese factor, all salsa.
So like Havana Nights.
Oh, God, no. Oh, no. Such a bad movie.
So
Lord
bad.
Have mercy. Again, tropes about Hispanics in America. Woohoo.
No, but that's even worse because it has like this really terrible look at the revolution, too.
Oh,
it's like one, it's like negative one dimensional view of the revolution.
Oh, it's brutal.
Oh,
it's
like great.
Young white girl. I just want to dance salsa. Teach me how.
Yeah, there's a lot of these dancing movies. You know, I'd like to one day we'll do a whole episode where we just rip on like Save the Last Dance and all of this.
Oh, I want to learn hip hop but ballet.
Oh my God.
I
want to
learn
oh my God.
Cuban dancing.
Step up to the streets.
Yeah. The streets.
You know what? I think I met the guys who like scored Step Up 2 out in L.A.
And really?
They had a blast just scoring a Step Up movie. All right. Well, aside from presenting films at Sun Cinema or movies, I guess not on film, you're also helping out organizing around the neighborhood. One of the things that you've been helping out is Best World. We've talked a bit about that before. But for anyone who isn't the most on top of this podcast listener, Best World is a neighborhood supermarket up the street from Sun Cinema in Mount Pleasant. And there's been threats or rumors of hostile takeovers by CVS. So it's just been a point where a lot of people organize around to try to apply some pressure to make CVS less interested and mostly to help Best World just become a better market. And Mariel's been kind of leading that charge or one of the leaders of that charge in Mount Pleasant. And it's looking nicer every day.
Yeah, yeah. So we recently did some repairs to the windows along the right-hand side, and we're looking to do repairs to the doors and the rest of the windows. So, you know, it's definitely a work in progress. There's a whole slew of, I guess, like different factors to have to take into consideration, right? So, like, on one hand, you have like the repairs that need to be done to the store. But then on the other hand, you have like the business side of things. You know, is this a sustainable business? Mm-hmm. With a lot of grocery stores now, they're doing
delivery.
They're mm-hmm. doing, you know, you can order online, mm-hmm. things like that. And, you know, those are things that we're exploring.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was actually something very interesting that I definitely wanted to look into. So we sent out this survey, right, about Best World and how people in the community felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the biggest, you know, things that people wrote in about was, one, we love, like, all the shit that's there. You know, you can get papayas, you can get jackfruit, you can get, you know, fufu powder, you can get tteokbokki noodles, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And all in one place. But the other one was the convenience, right? There's
right
a lot
there.
Of people that live in the neighborhood. You can just walk over there, grab a couple things, and leave. And so, like, that's really interesting. But there was, again, something to talk to a business consultant about because I don't know anything about this. When I was traveling in Argentina, you could go to the supermarket, and as you checked out your things, at the end of the line, they'd ask, do you want this to go or do you want to take it home? And if you said you wanted to take it to go, they had these crates at the end of the line instead of bags that they would just put your stuff in these crates and then you just leave and they would deliver it to your house at a later time.
Oh, I see.
That day.
Okay.
Best World used to do that, right?
So Best World will actually do that if you get over, I think it's $150 worth of groceries, they'll deliver it to your house.
Yeah, so they still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that it used to be the most pumping place on Sunday mornings and they'd have, you know, music outside, people hanging outside,
yeah.
and they would deliver groceries for people.
Yeah.
I remember that was a I mean, I never used it. I lived down the street. But I always thought that was a really nice thing that Best World did.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, and in particular for, you know, our community members and neighbors who are older or handicapped, you know, these sorts of services are, you know, really necessary. So the things are going well with that. And so we're kind of exploring that, you know, what needs to be redone in terms of the business side of things, you know, products that should be sold. And then, yeah, at the same time doing, trying to do repairs to the store, update things. We, you know, got a donation to repaint the outside of the store. So probably going to keep sort of like traditional colors that everyone knows in the neighborhood, but definitely do some updating to the signage.
Make it fresh. And,
yeah,
fresh
exactly. So it's been good. It's been good. And a shameless plug, but this Friday at Songbird in Adams Morgan.
It's like
right
half
around
a
the
block
corner.
Away from here.
Right around the corner from the line is we're doing a comedy show. It's free. We're taking donations. It's a punk house comedy show run by the hilarious comedian Maddie Brannon. If you're around, we'd love to chat.
And excellent. And shop there. Shop at Best World. In honor of Best World, let's go over some of the best scenes in supermarket scenes in movies. And you know what? Just feed us all the bad and good in-store music for the rest of the ep. Jason, what are some of your favorites?
When you brought this up, I was like, oh, this is going to be a little bit of a challenge. And then I realized, like, no, it's not a challenge at all. Like, there's a ton of great grocery store scenes.
There are
sequences.
So many.
I was looking the other day for music videos set in grocery stores. And I was like, oh, there's a million.
Yeah.
Huh.
I couldn't find
one. Oh, really?
No, not really.
Oh,
well,
it's a good setting for a music video.
Yeah, right.
It would be. One would think. Certainly in film, it's had its place.
Well, Clerks came up. But Clerks it's not quite a supermarket, but
convenience store.
Yeah.
I mean, still shopping. Clerks is an easy one. The opening scenes of Big Lebowski is epic.
Genius. Yeah,
epic. That was my pick. That's the best.
I personally think another Coen Brothers film, Raising Arizona, does one better. Both in the convenience store, and it's rifled throughout the entire film because he's, you know, robbed, knocking over convenience stores and keeps getting caught. And then the big takeaway when he, it feels like it's probably about a 10 or 12 minute sequence where he's robbing a convenience store and ends up in a grocery store.
It is. That is the most complex. This is the peak Coen Brothers. Some complex, it's like really intricate storytelling.
Yeah.
For no damn reason.
For no damn reason.
That one is just like a Rube Goldberg shopping scene. Robbery shopping scene.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I think another easy one is Hot Fuzz.
That one's really funny.
Yeah, if people aren't overly familiar with this film, they should definitely be familiar with this film. So good. Simon Pegg and, you know, the Nick Frost and the whole crew going into the grocery store for the big takedown scene. But there are several scenes in the grocery throughout the movie that are all excellent and definitely has the music like we've got going in the background now playing throughout all those scenes.
Did they go in a grocery store at all in Shaun of the Dead?
He definitely goes into the little kind of quickie mart type convenience store because that's when he's walking through when he hasn't realized what's going on
exactly. That's the thing. There's
he goes
so
to
many
get the Coronetto.
There's so many zombie movies and horror movies.
I guess those get shot a lot in supermarkets for whatever reason.
Another one, Zombieland, where they're looking for the Twinkies.
28 Days Later.
28 Days Later
I guess
is great.
You need food, right?
You need food.
You need food, exactly.
Yeah.
Or Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Like the third Evil Dead. And that one just is kind of like they all hole up in the grocery store, which is like, that's where I would go.
Yeah.
That one's. What else have we got?
Be ready for the opening of
Oh, it's Kmart.
Your local sports center.
Oh, a sports
center. We carry Remington, Winchester, Mossberg, and Marlin shotguns and
I guess you don't see. Do you see like a lot of supermarkets and rom-coms?
Oh, Steve Martin's got
Steve Martin's got, Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride.
With the hot dog buns. Yeah.
But do you know this predicament? Like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get 8 hot dogs, but 12 hot dog buns.
That's so irritating.
10 hot dog buns.
Why don't they just mesh up?
Wait, play that Raising Arizona clip. Do you have that one on there?
Any chance? Let me pull that up real quick. That is a good one. Let's see here. Pulling up Raising Arizona. We have to leave Kmart first.
Okay. Like, bye, Kmart. Right.
All right, we'll be back.
No, no, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin, said the little pig. Look at that. Look at him. Then I.
Oh, I see.
There we go. Now we got it.
Wake up, son. I'll be taking these Huggies and whatever cash you got.
No, not by the hair on my chin.
Oh, man. That kind of reminds me, No Country wasn't a grocery store. That was just like a gas station.
That was the gas station scene. Yeah, the Coens love a good kind of gas station, convenience store, grocery store. They eat it up.
They love an awkward shopping experience. Right. I've never stepped foot in a gas station since that scene, since he handed him the quarter.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Superbad's got it going on. I love Mr. Mom. Mm.
Yeah.
Because he has to, like, experience how hard it is to go to a grocery store.
Right, right.
Yeah, let's play that real quick.
Like straight-up battle sequences, yeah.
Half pound of salami, half pound of Swiss, half pound of Virginia ham, 2 celery. Oh, I think these are on special.
Doesn't matter. Sorry. Really.
Let me check.
Oh, those are feminine products.
Are these Kotex Maxi pads on special?
Never mind, Derek. Sorry, forget it.
Kotex, 19 cents off.
Thanks.
Yeah, we should be embarrassed about this.
Sorry, Ken.
Always.
My baby. Who are you?
Steven.
You know... So he loses his... He has the wrong kid. Somehow he ends up with, like, the wrong kid in the cart. If I would have thought about this earlier, we could have made a whole montage of just guys getting grossed out for having to buy pads at stores and movies. It just, like, doesn't get old. They think it's so funny.
It is a trope that has, like, gone back to over and over again.
But, you know, this is, like, really interesting. I'm going to have to look it up, otherwise I'm going to... butcher it, but the other day I was watching the Stephen Colbert show, and there was a comedian on there where I didn't quite understand like where he was going with this, but it's Bert Kreischer. He's talking about his two daughters and kind of going through the like getting your period time with his daughters, and so his oldest daughter, you know, she got it at school, and he called her, and she was like, "Oh, don't worry about it, Dad. Like, Mom packed me like a go bag,
right?
You know, I'm good.
You're ready.
You know, very like level." He was like, "Okay, that's cool. You know, glad we got all of this covered." But then with his youngest daughter, she got her period, and you know, he called her and was like, "Is everything okay? Like, what can I do for you? Like, let me know." And she goes, "Yeah, get a cake." And we're going to throw a period party. And he's like, "What?" And so, like, all her friends got together. They, like, invited, you know, her guy friends, but they didn't tell them, like, what the party was for. And they had this cake, and on the cake it says Josh, because they named it. And all her guy friends are just, like, you know, at this party, like, "Who's Josh?" But it's like a really cool way to kind of like,
yeah,
make it just, you know, normal.
Get your giggles out, boys. then you're not going to be awkward as Michael Keaton, like reaching around the Tide box to get the
painful to watch.
But it was really cool. Now I wish I had a period party.
I mean, who's to stop us from always having period parties? Mm. Yeah, I guess they get old. Yeah.
It's always a period party for somebody else. Every day.
All right, come on. Someone's got to... Would we have any non-period... do we have any non-period grocery store scenes?
Well, there's the Army of Darkness.
Oh, that one is good. Yeah. You guys ever worked... here's some of the best working at... a supermarket experiences. Play actually.
Repo
you
mind
playing Repo pretty, Man first, and then we'll play Army of Darkness.
Oh, where's that? I don't even know.
It should be at the top.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go.
So Emilio Estevez, my favorite Emilio movie, Repo Man.
Feeling 7 up, I'm feeling 7 up. Feeling 7 up, I'm feeling 7 up. It's a crisp, refreshing feeling, crystal clear and light. America's drinking 7 up, and it sure feels right. Feeling lucky 7.
Kevin, stop singing, man.
Huh? Where's the singing guy?
I'm standing right next to you and you're fucking singing. Cut it out.
We're so tense, guy.
We all have that friend.
You were late again this morning. Now, normally, I'd let it go, but it's been brought to my attention that you're not paying attention to the way you space the cans. Many young men of your age in these uncertain times... Otto, are you paying attention to me?
Hey, he's talking to you.
Fuck you.
Man, for anyone who's ever worked at the grocery store, you've always wanted to tell your boss that.
Yeah, I definitely worked at Superfood Town.
Oof. Superfood Town. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yep.
That sounds like Long Island.
Did you ever?
It's as Long Island as it gets.
Did you ever sing in really close proximity to your coworkers?
No.
Like sing the jingles that you heard all day?
No, definitely not.
It's been brought to my attention that you're not paying attention.
Oh, God.
Well, it's been a really nice show. Marielle, thanks for being here. Should we play ourselves out with some Army of Darkness and then some Kmart music if we need?
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's do it. All right. Let's all have a good week.
Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store.
Who the hell are you?
Name's Ash. Housewares.
I'll swallow your soul.
Come get some.
On a road I've walked before, ends alone at my front door. I shouldn't cry, but I do. Like an ordinary fool, when his ordinary dreams fall through.